Are you looking for a podcast that will feed you a fine diet of cereal mascots, product jingles, and incessant advertising campaigns?
You remember that little boy?
Zoom Zoom.
Did he have a secret?
And that secret?
Zoom Zoom. Zoom. What was he trying? Was he trying to warn us?
Zoom Zoom.
Ad Creeps is a brand new podcast that dissects and corrects the TV advertisements that raised us, phased us, and amazed us. Each week, one of the hosts will surprise the other with the amazing hidden history of a notorious advertising campaign.
It took 10 years to reveal that he was really America's ambassador of fun.
What could that possibly mean?
Not only will they tell you buck wild stories about the commercials you know and love, the hosts will also breathe new life into old ads.
We're downtown in a city.
Uh-huh.
A young kid has a McFlurry in hand.
Uh-huh.
He takes a bite, looks at it, and whips it at a cop. Ba-ba-ba-bum-bum. I'm doing my best.
Ad Creeps is a show where two queer, trans, and non-binary best friends shoot the shit for half an hour each week, chatting about childhood, nostalgia, and their weird relationship with themselves, each other, and gender.
I'm not a girl, I'm not a boy, I'm cartoon fruit.
Oh, I'm absolutely cartoon fruit.
That's the Ad Creeps Podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice.
On the Slay Queens podcast, we take a deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow.
This isn't just a cheesy catchphrase. It is a note to remember that the topics we discuss can be very graphic and lurid in nature. Listener discretion has been advised.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, Wayne.
Welcome back to you, Ashley.
How you doing?
I am doing pretty well. It's a beautiful day outside.
It is. I like opened the door. I'm like, you're wearing shorts.
Well, it's 65 degrees.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I didn't know. See, it's been deceiving. Like, it's been sunny, but like 30. So
that you are absolutely correct.
It changed.
It has been doing that. But, and I'm not like that typical Midwest person where like the first.
It's 50 degrees out.
Yeah. The first warm day. I'm like, yeah, like tank top and shorts. No, mm-hmm. I went to the gym, layered up appropriately the way that I normally do. And it was just so warm.
Yeah.
That I was like, you know what? I don't have to put on all of these layers. I'm just going to. Go
enjoy.
As is. Yeah.
I'm gonna air dry outside.
Yes. Which is titillating to some.
It is.
Some
it's
might say.
Me.
And
also sweaty Wayne post cardio.
I mean shenanigans and tomfoolery, I say.
That's right. That's
all right. We got it all in a minute.
That was good. Yeah. I didn't even plan that.
I mean, I felt like I was really reaching there.
But I liked it. I liked the way it worked.
But we got it in.
We did.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, all the queens, kings, and folks here to the Slay Queens podcast where we do something.
Well, we take a deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow.
I love how you always have the answers.
Yeah, I've got you.
This makes
time.
Me happy.
Every time.
Yes, this makes me happy. So welcome, everybody. And if this is your first time joining us, welcome for the first time and hopefully not the last.
Yes.
Also here... We do what we refer to as a rainbow star. Rainbow because we are queer people. Star because we give spotlights. We offer thank yous. We also make announcements or acknowledgements. And we try to provide you folks with some recommendations.
That's
so
correct.
Ashley,
mm-hmm.
This is a non-per-use, right?
I think it's becoming a little bit more per-use, though. It just depends on who's got it.
Exactly.
You know? It kind of bounces back and forth.
And when you got it, you got it.
That's right.
So you gotta,
you got it, flaunt it.
Yeah. That is legitimately... What my mama taught me growing up.
Absolutely.
She is that bitch, and she always mm-hmm. has been that bitch, and that has been a mantra of mine.
Flaunt what your mama gave you.
Exactly, my entire life. So please, in a...
Becoming per use?
Yeah, I was going to say, I almost said a coming of age per use,
yeah,
but that's not...
It could be.
A becoming per use,
yeah.
Will you kick us off?
I will. I will spotlight. So I wanted to spotlight this because it is Cerebral Palsy Awareness Month, which I'm just becoming aware of. I actually have two friends, Megan and Tabitha. Hi, guys. Hey, y'all.
Hi.
Doing that whole thing, right? Shout out. But yeah, they actually have a son who was diagnosed around 2 years old. A little bit of what Megan said to me was that he has hemiplegic cerebral palsy, which affects one half of his body. She says hemi, like hemisphere, it affects his left side. So that's kind of like one way to remember that type. And I didn't realize, so she sent me a little bit of literature, actually a lot of bit of literature, and I'm like, this is a lot.
Yeah.
But one thing I did want to kind of talk about, because she brought it up, was the different types, being the hemiplegia, monoplegia, diplegia, and quadriplegia, which it kind of, I mean, it's self-explanatory. Like, one affects just a limb, usually the arm. The other one that her son has affects one side of the body, including the arm, leg, and trunk. And then the diplegia affects symmetrical parts of the body, so it's typically the legs or the arms. And then the quadriplegia, of course, would be all four limbs.
Yes.
So, really interesting stuff. Like, there's so much more to it than I really even realized. And I'm glad that I mentioned to her that I wanted to bring this up, because I really did. I sat and read everything that she sent me, and I think that more people should kind of be educated on it, because he was born at 26 weeks, so he's already a miracle baby. And
yeah,
this is the one thing that they finally discovered, okay, this is what we're going to have to deal with, but it's manageable. And he is the happiest, cutest, sweetest little boy. Ugh, he does have a little attitude when he comes home from grandma's, but that's because he's coming home from grandma's, right?
Yeah.
But yeah.
He's been spoiled rotten at grandma's, and he's back to reality.
And he's back with moms, and moms say no, you know? So yeah, shout out to all of them, and you know, all the little ones out there, and all the moms and dads that are having to raise them, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing.
We
applaud you. Thank you for bringing that to light.
Yes. I'm glad that there's a month for it now. I feel like it's kind of a newer thing. Like, that's not something that I've heard in years past, and I feel like we should definitely take notice.
Absolutely. I agree with that 1,000%. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
Do you have, we're going to bounce over to thank yous?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I think we are officially in thank you territory.
All right.
I would like to offer this week a thank you to David, who is a host of the Rooster Bat Show. He's just shown us an incredible amount of love on Twitter, recommending us as a podcast that people should be listening to and
Yay!
Loving and whatnot. And we thank you, David. And we would hope that our queens, kings, and folks would go over and show him an equal or greater amount of love and appreciation.
I will say, I've learned in the podcast world, it's the same as like in hair world, where I've always said a referral is the best compliment you can give.
Absolutely.
It really is.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's an amazing way to look at it.
Right? I like that.
So I think maybe I'm bouncing back over to you. We're volleying.
We
Is that a thing? Is that a sports term?
No, I think so. Yes. The sports world. We're volleying back and
forth.
Back
and forth. Yes. Because you, I think, have announcements or acknowledgements this
week. Yes, but I don't remember what I was going to say.
Well, that's interesting.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. It is. Okay, I totally wanted to acknowledge. I guess it's not really an announcement, because I don't need to announce what I'm doing in day-to-day life. But I want to acknowledge that I really do listen to them, like, almost every morning that I'm getting ready for work. Like, that, it just starts my day. They're so funny. I laugh out loud as if I were, like, in the room with them. And we've talked about them a few times, but I just felt like I should acknowledge that I truly do listen very often. And I love what you're doing. Do not change a thing.
That's Jill and Marissa of the Well, That's Interesting podcast.
That's exactly right.
And they really are just killing it.
They are. They're so funny. And honestly, I needed something that wasn't true crimey, but I still get a little bit of that feeling, because it's these just wild stories that, sure, there's not murder happening, but it's like, oh my God, it's something that you never think, this will never happen to me, you know? So it's so interesting.
That's it is very interesting.
Like,
yeah, it's
perfect...
very, very interesting. And they're doing a great job.
Yeah.
I love what they're doing, and I absolutely agree. Don't change a thing.
That's right.
And if you folks are not yet listening to these incredible podcasters, then what are you doing
with
your
life? Then what are you doing?
Okay, and I am not sure that I even have a recommendation. I'm not even sure why I'm here this week.
Why are we even doing a star?
Yeah, because I don't really have a recommendation for the week. I could pull something out. So yesterday, the fiance and I did just a little Sunday fun day together. So we went out and like did a brunch, all very appropriate and socially distanced, and masks were worn and hand sanitizer was used in abundance and whatnot.
Yes.
We also went over to the E19 bar, which is the new gay bar in the area. And our friend, PhD.
I saw that. Sierra was like, where did they go yesterday? And I said, oh, it's a new gay bar. I haven't been there yet. Well, clearly.
Our friend PhD is part of the cast there. And she does a drag show. Again, very appropriate, very socially distanced. Everything is done very appropriately and in accordance with the mandates and whatnot. But amazing show. I highly recommend it. There are some other great performers there yesterday. Molly Mormon was there, who we also stan, and Lexi Love, who I am a little bit obsessed with.
Yeah.
Also a local queen. Just a fabulous show there. Yeah. I really, really enjoyed it, and I recommend it to anybody who is local to Cincinnati or maybe in the tri-state area. Come visit and check it out.
You know what? Actually, I was thinking this yesterday, so I think my recommendation should be a local thing too. I finally went and checked out, my friend Amanda is a yoga instructor, and there is a new-ish, I guess it's new as of a year, hot yoga bar down in the OTR area, and it's called Sage Yoga Hot. Now, there's Sage Yoga in Covington, kind of near you, but that's just their regular yoga studio, and it's super cute too. But this one, like, I just love the attitude. I love the walls are black. You walk in, there's like candles, obviously not really lit candles, but the LED ones. And at the end of your hot yoga session, she walks around and gives you a cold lavender towel. And I don't know about you, but that was like a game changer for me. Like, absolutely. Just that little thing makes it so much more personal and amazing, like, just to, like, get back to your day after sweating your butt off for, you know, an hour. But I totally recommend their studio. I mean, I know that they have a couple, like, virtual classes, too. So even for people that aren't local, you might want to check it out because it's definitely our type of place.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
If you're into yoga. Well, even if you're not, try it out, man.
Try it out. Maybe the lavender will make it completely
all worth it.
All worth it. Yeah,
like it was for me, right? It's the little things.
It is the little things, and it's those little touches that add a little something extra, or those little ways in which you personalize what you're offering to people.
I've been doing hot yoga for like probably 8 years. I didn't know that was something I needed. And it is. It absolutely is.
I love that. That is the best, I think, compliment you could offer.
So yeah, Sage hot yoga, go for it. Well, absolutely.
Cool. Very cool, thank you for that as well.
All right, that brings us to the end of the beginning.
That brings us to the beginning of the end.
The beginning of the end of the end of the
end
beginning.
Of the beginning.
I'm not sure which one, but I like either one.
You know what, I think it brings us to the beginning of a break.
That's right, there we go.
There we go. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and tell this very important story.
Very important story.
Okay, okay.
And we are here.
We are back again.
That's right. You haven't done it in a while. You needed to do it.
Yeah. I enjoy doing it.
Yes.
I legitimately do. You're so good at it. I mean, I've had a lot of practice.
That's fair.
Today, we are telling an important case. I honestly was thinking about it yesterday or the day before. It was yesterday. Yesterday, I was reading back over my notes, just kind of proofreading and correcting any spelling errors and things of that nature, and reading it, you know, from start to finish. I realized just how important this case is. And I thought to myself, you know, this might be one of the most important cases we've covered so far.
I can definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot, but it's definitely a case that needs to be discussed. Mm-hmm. It's one that I'm going to say it this time, it's one that I'm excited to share, because it's one that we have spoken about doing on the podcast for a while.
Yeah.
We just didn't feel like the time was right, or didn't feel like the opportunity at the time was the appropriate time, but now it is. So today we will be discussing the Disappeared series. The episode specifically is called Born This Way, and just a little bit of information about that. According to the IMDb page, this episode was season 9, episode 5 of the Disappeared series. Its original air date was April 29th of 2018, and a description reads, quote, "When Sage Smith, a transgender teen in Charlottesville, Virginia, goes missing, police identify a suspect. But the investigation turns up evidence that forces detectives to take a closer look into Sage's inner circle to see if there are any answers." I'm not sure exactly where you found this episode to watch, but some of the listeners and some of the folks, as far as I can tell, this episode is available as part of the Disappeared series, which is on Investigation Discovery. It can be streamed on Amazon, and it's also available on Hulu, and I'm not sure if this is a subscription-specific thing, but my Hulu in accordance with my specific Hulu subscription, only gave me options to watch seasons 5 through 8.
Yeah.
And this specific episode is, of course, season 9.
Yeah.
So what I ended up doing is I found it on the Searching for Sage Smith Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is still active. And that's actually where I watched this particular episode.
Well, there you go.
Where did you find it?
Amazon. That's where I watched it. I ended up, I think I paid for it, though.
That was what I thought I was going to have to do. And then, like I said, I just randomly found it on the Facebook page.
It's on Amazon, or it's on Hulu if you have, like, the $50 a month or whatever, not the basic, which I only have during baseball season. And it's not quite there yet. They're only in spring training, so I just watch the updates, Teach. Sorry. Yeah. I know you're doing well, though. Shouts to you.
Hi, TJ.
Actually, too, it's on YouTube if you have, like, the YouTube subscription.
Got it. It's on there, too. Okay. Yeah, I'm cheap. I only pay for basic.
I hardly ever use YouTube, to be honest.
So let's dive into this. Our episode opens on November 20th of 2012 in Charlottesville, Virginia. As the first chill of winter blusters through the city streets, a young woman by the name of Sage Smith is at home getting ready for a date. We quickly meet Sage's grandmother, Miss Lolita Smith, aka Miss Cookie, a nickname she, quote, picked up because of her sweet nature. With unmistakable pride, Miss Cookie lets the audience know that Sage liked to dress to impress, that she was very fashionable, and she took pride in the way that she looked. I mean, and how much do we love Miss Cookie?
Oh, so much. We even talked about it, like, amazing. Before we even decided to do this, when we're like, maybe we should cover this case. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. This is also where we find out that at the time, Sage was 19 years old and living out and proud as a transgender woman. Miss Cookie goes further to explain that prior to Sage's coming out as transgender, she had only had knowledge and experiences with people who were gay or bisexual, and was still learning about the transgender community. And she actually even said, quote, "So I'm learning and I'm still learning," end Aww, quote.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know about you, but that for me was when Miss Cookie became my absolute favorite person.
Oh, yeah.
Not only in the episode, quite possibly just in the entire world. Yeah.
I need a Miss Cookie in my life.
I think we all need a Miss Cookie.
Yes, I agree.
In our lives. Miss Cookie, who, you know, she bakes, like, amazing cookies too, right?
Of course, she has to.
Yeah, so this is absolutely something that we all need more of in our lives. A bit of content warning here. The narrator lets us know that Sage's coming out as transgender and beginning her transition was so new at the time that this story takes place that a lot of her family still refer to her via the use of male pronouns, as well as Sage's dead name. And it's not just Sage throughout the course of this episode. We get a lot of misgendering with a lot of the characters and whatnot. So definitely content warning.
It's frustrating.
It's frustrating, but this is a very important case. It's a very important story. People should know about it, but definite content warning here with regard to that sort of thing if it's something that you're sensitive to. I have in my notes here even, we've seen and heard a lot of that sort of thing, unfortunately, and the majority of the time, I do feel as though it comes from a negative place, either a place of ignorance or disrespect, essentially just the refusal of people accepting, acknowledging, or respecting a person's true self. But I don't necessarily get that vibe from this family in this particular situation. I developed that opinion because in the next few scenes, we meet Sage's mother, a woman by the name of Latasha Dennis, as well as her sister, I think it's Rasha Langston, who tells the audience that to their knowledge, Sage didn't like or accept labels and didn't consider herself exclusively one gender or the other. They say she was actually more of a gender fluid person. And for those reasons, the program announces that they will be taking the lead from Sage's loved ones and primarily be referring to her with male pronouns and via her dead name. This program, however, this podcast, we will be doing the opposite. And I don't mean to disrespect Sage's family and discount the close, loving relationship that I really genuinely do feel like they all had with this person. But throughout the episode, Miss Cookie, who everyone reports had the closest relationship with Sage, only uses the name Sage and only uses female pronouns. So I feel like here on this platform, that's the most appropriate thing for us to do as well.
Yeah, and I feel like in my opinion, it's one thing for someone to be gender fluid and say, either pronoun works for me, any pronoun works for me, but it's a whole other to like misuse the name. You changed your name, you go by this name now, so at least just use the name.
Exactly.
That's my opinion though.
Yeah. So no, that's a very valid opinion and thank you for sharing it. We go on to meet more of Sage's family members, including another sister whose name is Iana Langston. They further my personal belief that Sage mostly had a loving, supportive home life as a child. The audience is told by both the mother and the siblings that they had known Sage was queer from the time that she was little and that they were simply waiting for her to come out to them in her own time. And that when they did, Sage was met with assurances of love and acceptance. Mm. So I really do believe
that this
was a good family structure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, not everyone in Sage's life was quite so wonderful. Her peers at school and some of the neighborhood boys would actually bully Sage. There was even an incident that's discussed when Sage was attempting to gain some kind of acceptance from fellow students, joined the football team in high school, only to later have team members urinate on her jersey.
Ugh, it's awful.
Yeah, it's
awful. And disgusting.
It is disgusting. But unfortunately, bullies weren't the only difficulty Sage encountered coming out. Additionally, she initially had trouble gaining acceptance from her father. Dean Smith, Sage's dad, whom she reportedly saw often and had a good relationship with, explains to us that when she told him her truth, his fear and lack of understanding caused him to lash out at his firstborn child. Dean, of his own admission, said a lot of hurtful things to Sage and ordered her to stay away from him, which of course deeply hurt and affected Sage. The distance between the two lasted weeks until, according to Dean, his youngest child gave him a reality check. It was at that time that Dean's youngest reminded the man, quote, "You always told us, no matter what, always be happy within yourselves first," end quote. This was the wake-up call that Dean was referring to. This was the wake-up call that Dean needed. The very next day, which I completely respect, the very next day, he met with Sage to apologize for his cutting words and his bad behavior. Dean also took that opportunity to sit down with his child, ask about her life, and gain a better understanding of who she truly was as a person. The broken bond between the two soon began to heal.
And this is like something from a TV show, right? Because it's like not so often will a father like swallow their pride so quickly and be like, you know what, I was wrong. Let me ask some questions. It's a huge ode to his character.
Yeah. This family, in my opinion, is doing almost all the right things.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
almost all
the right things.
Absolutely.
This is almost as good a situation mm-hmm. as this person could
wholesome
have hoped
for. Enough, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Beyond her strong relationships with family, Sage also had a close group of queer friends who were all supporting one another in their lives, in their coming out, and in their transitioning. One such friend, whom Sage had since middle school, was Shakira Washington. We have the opportunity to meet Shakira, a beautiful transgender woman of color, and she quickly fills us in on the closeness of her relationship with Sage. How the two had grown up together, they had gone to prom together, and overall, she described the friendship with Sage as, quote, just everything.
Mm-hmm,
which
no,
was kind of a
everything.
Sad, heartbreaking moment. And that's what she said.
Honestly,
she was like, it was just everything.
I know, and I totally get what that's like to have, like, a best girlfriend that you do everything together. It is everything. Your life is not the same without them.
That's a perfect way to describe that. In March of 2012, after graduating high school, Sage, Shakira, and a third friend whose name was Aubrey Carson all moved into an apartment together. It was also at that time that Sage began studying cosmetology, often practicing her skills on friends at home, with the hopes of one day becoming a professional hairdresser.
I remember those days.
I was literally just about to ask.
Does
this seem familiar
days.
At all?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's what you do, especially in hair school. You're always practicing on your friends, like, oh, let's do some shots and cut some hair. Sounds great.
That sounds wise. Suddenly, kind of abruptly, in fact, we cut back to November of 2012, where Thanksgiving is just around the corner. Sage's mother, Latasha Dennis, returns to the screen to let us know that she and Sage were planning to surprise the two sisters by having them all celebrate the holiday together at Latasha's home. Sage was reportedly excited about the time that she was going to spend with her family and agreed to come to her mother's house on Thanksgiving Day. The night before, however, Sage had a date. So this brings us to the night in question. On that night, one roommate, Shakira Washington, was actually out of town while the second roommate napped on the couch. Before leaving at around 5:40 p.m., Sage woke Aubrey Carson up to tell her that she was heading out for her date, but she would be returning home later that evening. However, the next morning, Aubrey woke up to realize that Sage actually hadn't made it back home that night. With no signs of her in the apartment, Aubrey attempts to call Sage's cell phone, which goes straight to voicemail. I have in my notes here, in the history of all things true crime, is a universally bad sign.
Alarm bells are going off. It's like, okay, something's happening.
Exactly. So if people in my day-to-day life, if I first and foremost text them and don't get a response, because I don't ever call anybody.
That's true.
But if I text them and don't get a response and it escalates to the point that I feel the need to call them and it goes directly to voicemail, I'm going to call the police immediately.
Absolutely.
I'm just going to assume that
something horrible
has happened.
You are definitely tied up somewhere in someone's basement and or trunk.
You're at the bottom of a well.
Yeah.
Someone's lowering a bottle of lotion down to you.
It puts the lotion on its skin.
Or else it gets the hose again.
It literally will always be the creepiest in a horror movie history.
I agree. All right, so let's get back to Sage. Everyone agrees that this is very unusual behavior, and this is very unlike Sage. Miss Cookie even tells us that Sage's cell phone was, quote, always glued to her ear. She was always on that phone, and she even took her charger with her everywhere.
Yeah, they do make that pretty apparent. She's just like a typical, you know, millennial.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
No disrespect, but my initial thought process was, well, she was unexpectedly out all night, so her phone, if she's always on it, well, it's dead now. But Miss Cookie was like, she even took her charger with her.
Good point.
Address that concern. So Aubrey makes a few phone calls and discovers that Sage's stepsister, a woman by the name of Kiara Morgan, had actually seen her the night prior on Main Street. According to Kiara, at around 6:30 p.m., she was headed to the bus stop when she ran into Sage, who was on a phone call at the time. Kiara doesn't know who Sage was talking with or where she was going, but she does overhear the person on the phone ask where Sage is, to which Sage answers, "I'll be there in 5 minutes." This would be the last known, confirmed time Sage Smith was seen dead or alive.
Ugh, how frustrating is that, too?
Further concerned by this information, Aubrey contacts Miss Cookie, again, the person that Sage has the best, closest relationship with. She contacts Miss Cookie, who feels very anxious about what she's hearing, and she immediately asks Aubrey to call the police and report what she knows.
She's got that, like, mama bear feels.
Yeah, she's got those intuitions. Charlottesville detectives launch a missing persons investigation into the whereabouts of Sage Smith on Thanksgiving Day of 2012. And I do think there are a couple of points throughout this episode where the timeline maybe isn't correct. It's not reported correctly. And I tried to be mindful of that when I was taking my notes, because the narrator actually says here that the investigation started the next day, but he also specifically said on Thanksgiving Day, which would have to be the day that Sage was initially reported missing, which I actually thought was incredible. There was none of that. Again, I've mentioned this before. We've talked about this before. There was none of that. You got to wait 48 to 72 hours.
Come back in 2 days.
They seemingly took this investigation very seriously. We have the opportunity now to meet the lead investigator on the case, Lieutenant Jim Mooney, who says that early on, law enforcement suspected foul play simply based on the fact that Sage was having no contact or communication with her family and friends, which everyone reported was unusual behavior.
Totally weird, yeah.
Yeah. They also take into consideration that there could be foul play motivated by hate violence because of Sage's identity as a queer person. Lieutenant Mooney maybe didn't verbalize that quite as eloquently.
Yeah, I was going to say, not exactly how he said.
Yeah, but I do believe, in general, throughout the course of his being interviewed with regard to this case, I do think he's making efforts to be respectful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I personally don't feel offended by him, and I don't feel the need to drag him for filth. I actually have some really good things to say about him later.
Definitely, because there's a couple comments that he makes that I'm like, okay, like I can, I'm glad that you're standing by that.
Exactly. Exactly. And you are taking this opportunity on a very public platform to express those opinions.
Yeah.
and I appreciated it. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later. And also, just in general, I appreciated the fact that they're being mindful enough about the fact that this Black transgender woman has disappeared, and that because of that, she could have potentially been the victim of a hate crime. Mm-hmm. Because we don't always see that in these cases. We've sure. talked about plenty of them.
Where they're in not, which... they completely dismiss it.
Exactly.
Like, oh, it's not.
Exactly. With little else to go on, police begin their investigation by attempting to identify who Sage was on the phone with, aka who Sage was supposed to meet after she was last seen.
In 5 minutes, apparently.
In 5 minutes. I'll be there in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
In order to do this, they have to subpoena her cell phone records, which we Slay Queens know takes days.
It's not easy.
Right? It's not easy. In the meantime, a team of officers conduct a grid search of the area surrounding Main Street in Charlottesville, but there is no sign of Sage. Not even any sign of her on security footage of the local businesses. Because, of course, there never is any security footage. We Slay Queens also know that.
No, there would never be. It's never going to be that easy.
Never going to be that easy.
This is not CSI, okay?
Mm-hmm. All of that turns up no new clues, which makes Sage's family more anxious. Reaching the point of frustration, Dean Smith, again, that's Sage's father, decides to take matters into his own hands. And before we have the opportunity to learn exactly what it is that Dean does, the audience has a quick opportunity here just to fall in love with him. We cut to his being interviewed, clearly being interviewed about what it is that he had done, and we don't actually hear the questions, but it's heavily implied. And Dean's justification for his actions are as follows, quote, "I don't care about protocol. I don't care about any of that. My child's out there. I gotta find my baby," end quote.
Ugh. My heart.
I mean, literally, my note here says, cue me and my daddy issues have an ass, full-fledged, ugly, crying.
Oh, you lost it.
It was such a sweet, tender moment. And yeah, I have daddy issues. I think most gay
it's okay.
men do. Yeah, I had that moment where I was like, this is what a true father's love for his child yes. looks like.
Yes.
And it was absolutely beautiful.
I agree. I didn't full sob, but I did get a little, like, you know, choked up.
A little
sure.
bit emotional.
It was a moment.
A little
for
bit
sure.
emotional. So, what did Dean do?
So, what did Dean do?
What did Dean do?
I like an alliteration like that. That's nice.
Sage's mother, Latasha, is able to guess her daughter's password, log into Sage's account, and actually find the phone number of the person that she was last speaking with.
Do you ever make a password, though, and wonder if someone in your life would be able to guess it because it's too obvious?
Oftentimes I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oftentimes I do, too. I'm like, is this too... No. Is this enough? No. Yeah. But I totally... But then sometimes I'm like, what if something like this happens? Then you might want them to be able to guess it.
And
you
that's
know?
And that's actually something that some other true crime podcasts recommend.
Yeah. That I think about that all the time.
You leave, like, if I go missing folder...
Yeah.
And have passwords to certain things so that you don't have to wait the days to subpoena phone records.
Something to start considering.
Exactly. Absolutely. So what did he do? Like I said, Latasha is able to access her phone records and find the number of the person she was actually on the phone with when she was last seen. That number was unfamiliar to anyone in the family. So Dean calls the number multiple times and he gets no answer. He then decides to take things a step further by posting the number on Facebook in a status reading, and I'm going to paraphrase here out of respect for Sage, status that read something along the lines of, "If anyone knows this number, this is the last person who was seen with my child. Please message me." And within hours, Dean got a response.
Yes.
A friend of Sage's by the name of Yami Ortiz, I have no idea how that was spelled. We didn't actually have an opportunity to meet that person on the episode, so I just kind of put it in my notes phonetically. Yami Ortiz inboxed Dean stating that the number in question belonged to a man by the name of Eric McFadden. Yami went further to explain that Sage and Eric had recently secretly been dating. Secretly, both because Eric already had a girlfriend and because he was closeted about having any involvement with the queer community. Now fearing that Eric may have harmed Sage in order to keep his secrets secret, Dean obtained a picture of the man and posted that on Facebook as well. This post read something along the lines of, again, I'm paraphrasing here, "If anyone knows who this guy is or of his whereabouts, please contact me. He was the last person seen with my child. Also, it should be noted here that not Dean nor Sage's family share any of this information with the Charlottesville police because they don't want them to shut down their own kind of vigilante investigation that's happening.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. But coincidentally, without Dean's help, 2 days later, on November 24th, the name Eric McFadden would also pop up on investigators' radar when he, too, was reported missing. A 20-year-old student of the University of Virginia named Esther contacted police to report that she was out of town for the holiday, because remember, it's Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. but she had been unable to reach her boyfriend who was still in town, or at least she believed that he was still in town. Esther told authorities that she had been calling and calling his cell phone, but it was going straight to voicemail, and she was concerned that he may be incapacitated in some sort of way at home in their shared apartment. Esther requests that they perform a welfare check of the residents, which is not super uncommon. You know,
yeah, no.
Law enforcement does that sort of thing all the time. An officer was sent, but according to Detective Regine Wright Settle, the bad bitch of the episode,
I love that,
whom we've just had the opportunity to meet, no one was home when that officer arrived, so he left. And we stan a strong woman who hyphenates those maiden and married names.
That's right.
I love her, so Slay Queen. She's going to come back up a few times. Now, Charlottesville authorities don't immediately connect these two missing persons cases. That is until, again, by what seemingly was just happenstance. Mm-hmm. Later that same day, Yami Ortiz drops by the police station. Yami fills investigators in on Eric's relationship with Sage, as well as the Facebook activity surrounding Dean Smith's searching for the man in connection with his daughter's disappearance.
That's right.
So she drops the bomb to the police that, hey, this person is also missing, but he was in a relationship with your other missing person. And oh, by the way, there's this vigilante investigation that's happening that you guys might want to know something about. With all of this information, according to Lieutenant Jim Mooney, police go public with their search for Sage as a missing person and also with Eric McFadden being a person of interest in that case. Mm-hmm. In doing so, they learn that Eric has actually been absent from work the last 3 days, and it is apparent that the man has left town, to which bad bitch Detective Wright hyphen Settle says the fact that he ran makes him seem like a likely suspect. She then poses the question, quote, because why would you run unless you had done this, end quote.
Yeah, like, and at OJ, come on.
Exactly. Allegedly. Because OJ can sue us.
Yeah. It's just part of the story, man.
Exactly.
It's just part of the story.
Next, police are given permission by the girlfriend, Esther, to search the home that she and Eric share. Investigators make entry and find no evidence that Sage had been in the apartment, nor any evidence that a crime had been committed there. They ultimately end up seizing a computer from the residence, and they also discover a receipt from a CVS store indicating that a purchase had been made by Eric on November 22nd. And just as a point of reference, timeline-wise, the 22nd was actually 2 days after Sage had gone missing. So the authorities begin to question their theory that the man may have fled the city immediately after committing some sort of crime against Sage. Mm-hmm. So that particular conjecture doesn't match the timeline, but a new one kind of seemed to start to form. So the new timeline would seem to suggest that Eric fled town not immediately after Sage's disappearance, but after the Facebook posts had been published indicating that he had been the last person with her before she went missing.
When he got.
Yeah, when he got. Investigators continue looking into the relationship between Sage and Eric by questioning her friends and roommates. The audience learns from Shakira Washington that though the two had been very close, again, this is her childhood friend, they were living together, et cetera, et cetera, Sage had actually never spoken to Shakira about Eric. Aubrey Carson reports that she only had once briefly met Eric in passing, but also knew nothing further about the relationship between he and Sage. So unfortunately, this doesn't offer police a ton of new leads or information, but it is around this same time that they finally gain access to Sage's phone records.
I want to say, too, that I don't feel like this is a terrible decision on Sage's part or anything like that. I do think it happens, but I just feel like this should be like a Queen's law. Even if you don't want to out someone, at least just tell someone that you trust who you've been dating. Like, at
least. I agree.
Because then they're not going to know who murdered you. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. You need to just at least say, I don't want to out anyone. It's not a situation that's great for me, but this is who it is. You know, something. Tell someone.
Yeah. Okay. So we have so much access to meeting people.
Yes.
You know, there's Tinder, there's Grindr, there's all of these things. It's always smart to let somebody know, even if you're meeting someone casually and you're not necessarily proud of the fact that you're meeting someone casually, let someone close to you.
They're
not going to care.
Yeah.
But let someone close to you know where you're going to be and who you're going to be with. And I definitely think that kind of general principle should extend into a certain period of time in your relationship, because even weeks, couple of months into the relationship, you're still learning who this person is.
Absolutely.
So yeah, absolutely. Let the people closest to you, at least one person,
the buddy system
who you're spending your time with for situations like this, in case you go missing, in case something happens to you,
because it could happen to anyone.
It could happen to anyone, and clearly something bad happened in this situation.
Absolutely.
So they have, they finally gain access to Sage's phone records. Now, we, the audience, already know that the last known person to have called Sage's cell phone was, in fact, Eric McFadden. That's not new information to us. However, authorities now also have access to the actual text messages that were exchanged between the two. A review of those messages would indicate to the investigators that, Sage and Eric actually hadn't met for their date on the night that she disappeared. So a little bit of a game changer. Basically, there was this series of text messages indicating that Sage had stood Eric up on the night in question. With this, law enforcement shift their focus on attempting to locate Eric, not for questioning as a suspect. They're still trying to locate him, but they don't want to question him as a suspect now. They just want to verify the events of the evening as they know them and actually clear him from any involvement. But he remains MIA.
But also, too, don't you think, I don't know, I just feel like he could have sent those texts on purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. It could have been a very pointed, we've heard of that sort of thing in true crime cases. Yeah, right?
He's done enough research. It's a very simple, easy thing to do that really would throw people off.
What's that called? A red herring?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Really easy. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. So they don't know where he is. He's MIA. That is until November 27th, which is 7 days after Sage's disappearance, when a person identifying himself as Eric McFadden contacts Charlottesville police. When questioned, Eric explained to the investigators that his leaving town was completely unrelated to Sage's disappearance, and he had decided to take an impromptu trip to New York City over the holiday. The reason he gave for this spur-of-the-moment excursion to the Big Apple? Oh, well, it was just a place he always wanted to go. So
yeah,
he just went.
He didn't tell his girlfriend.
Yeah.
What?
So I call bullshit, as a matter of fact.
But he's...
For sure.
He's still in New York when he calls them back, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So,
or at least he says that's where he is.
That's fair, yeah.
Lieutenant Mooney pops up on the screen, and he lets us know that he finds this whole situation to be very suspicious. So he's calling bullshit, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When questioned about the nature of his connection with Sage, Eric confirms that the two had a sexual relationship and that on the night that she went missing, they'd made plans to meet in front of the Amtrak bus station on Main Street, but that she never showed. Before ending the phone call with the police, Eric agrees to come back to Charlottesville to clear things up with authorities in person. He even went so far as to tell them he would be traveling back to town by bus and gave them the date and time that his bus was supposed to arrive back in Charlottesville so they could show up to the bus station to meet him. Right?
Right.
And what happens?
But then, yeah.
Shock of the century, he doesn't show up.
There's another stand-up happening in this situation.
To which Miss Cookie immediately wants to know, if you've got nothing to hide, why wouldn't you come in and just clear your name? And I can't say that I disagree with that in the least. If you're truly innocent, show up.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before. Be smart about it. You know, bring a lawyer.
Bring a lawyer because you got to cover your butt. You know.
Exactly.
You might be a marginalized group. So, yeah.
Exactly.
You know,
but
how these things
show
work.
Up.
But yeah, be there. Say, do what you say you're going to do. Because now that you're not, you're automatically a liar.
Yeah, you're automatically a liar. You are discrediting anything else that you would say, like mm-hmm. moving forward with the investigation. And if you truly had nothing to do with it, you can save these investigators this time and effort and money no longer pursuing you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's
and
exactly
let them consider other suspects or other avenues.
Listen, even OJ drove back home when he knew that he got to say hello to his mama. I'm just saying, he went back because he was like, okay, momentary lapse, right?
Yeah.
Like, this person could have just said, all right, I freaked out because I knew everyone was going to be on me. Mm-hmm. Momentary lapse, I'll be there, and then show up and, like, stand up, right? But
exactly.
Now you're just, yeah, I'm just saying.
Now you've made
you
yourself
said.
Look worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Now we fast forward 3 days, and we're back to Eric's girlfriend, Esther. She's now returned to Charlottesville after the holiday, and she comes into the police station to report that she'd actually heard from him. He had sent her an email outlining what happened on the night of Sage's disappearance. Mm-hmm. Esther decided to come forward with the story because the new version of events differed greatly from the original story that Eric had told.
Yeah.
To Esther, Eric claimed that Sage actually hadn't stood him up that night. Sage had actually shown up at the agreed-upon location in front of the Amtrak station. The two had left that spot together, and while they were walking, a group of people approached them. Eric indicated that Sage had a lot of enemies, and he suspected that this group of people that was approaching them maybe were her enemies.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but it's like you are a grown man walking with someone you're dating, and you see a group of people who, what you're alluding to is they're going to attack her, they're going to hurt her, they're
they
going
were some
to verbally
sort of threat
something
to her.
In some
yeah.
way. So your choice is to just bail.
He left.
You literally just admitted to that.
Yeah.
Got it. Stand up guy all around. Awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah, he said that he was trying to avoid conflict or confrontation, so he just left, leaving Sage with this unidentified group of people who he felt were a threat to
her. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to cover my ass. See ya. Every person for themselves.
So there were also some BS claims in this email that Sage had actually been blackmailing Eric with regard to their having a sexual relationship with one another. And I don't really care to address that any further. It really sounded like some trashy victim-blaming Dale
like
Wayne Sigler bullshit.
There's a lot of news articles, too, out there that hone a lot on saying that, yeah, there was blackmail going on. And it just really pissed me off to see how many talked about that. Because I'm like, that's not
blaming.
Even relevant to the story,
yeah.
even.
It's unsubstantiated.
It is.
And it's victim-blaming.
Yeah.
And the only reason I mention it at all is because of these blackmail allegations and because of inconsistencies in Eric's story, he once again rises to the top of investigators' suspect list.
Yeah.
They then obtain search warrants for his computer, for his phone records, for his social media accounts, his bank records, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They look into all that and they find nothing.
And part of me thinks, too, I feel like at this point, Esther just wants him to get caught. Like, she's trying to, like, prove that this had to have been him.
Well, I mean, something that I didn't consider literally till this moment right now, as you've said that, Esther's a woman scorned.
Hell hath no fury, right?
She got cheated on, honey. Yeah, like, she's
very
a woman scorned.
That's true.
With Eric McFadden out of reach and their investigations into him turning up no new evidence, law enforcement shifts their efforts to focus on Sage herself. They access her social media and email accounts looking for any indication that someone other than Eric may have been a threat to her. Police discover that there were other men in Sage's life who were closeted about their having a relationship with her. One such person was a man whose secret relationship with Sage had been exposed a few months prior when his girlfriend discovered emails exchanged between the two. According to Shakira, that man blamed Sage for his being, quote, outed, and even went so far as to physically attack and assault Sage.
Wow.
Yeah. However, in the case of Sage's disappearance, that person was quickly ruled out as a suspect because he was actually incarcerated at
That's
the time
right.
that
That's
Sage
right.
had gone missing.
Okay, yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah. So the dive into Sage's social media and email accounts turned up no new leads. But while also monitoring her financial activity, police got a hit. Sage's credit card had been used to make a purchase at a local convenience store approximately 2 weeks after she had gone missing. A review of the business's surveillance footage, so this is like the one business that has surveillance footage, led to the discovery that the purchase had not been made by Sage herself, but it had been made by her roommate, Aubrey, which Sage's family, as well as investigators, found suspicious. They thought this was suspicious activity. And we cut to Miss Cookie saying, "It was shady to me."
I loved it. I didn't know if you were going to bring it up.
Amen, Miss Cookie. She knows shade when she sees shade.
And that is shade.
Yeah. This on top of the fact that police could not confirm Aubrey's alibi for the night that Sage had disappeared led them to question her. And if the folks will recall, Aubrey's alibi was that she was at home asleep on the couch the night in question. Mm-hmm. Which couldn't be proven or substantiated by anything. When asked about these things, Aubrey answers that the two women were so close that using each other's credit cards was a common and acceptable occurrence. With no evidence to the contrary, detectives eliminate Aubrey as a suspect in Sage's disappearance, at least for now.
Yeah, I just don't like it.
There are so many circumstances surrounding so many people in this case that I don't have a great feeling about. Multiple.
It's so true. But then I considered too, one article that I read said it was like a WIC card, like a government like food stamp card, which to me, I guess I could understand being like, well, it's just the government's money anyways. I'll just use her card to go buy some groceries. So I can see that. But also, I don't know. I just don't know. There's just something about it that's just off to me.
Yeah, there are so many red flags.
Yeah.
Coming at you from so many different directions in this case.
It's, like, why are they all so, like, they just lie about things.
Yeah.
It's just, nothing adds up.
So many inconsistencies in everyone's stories.
Yeah.
Suddenly, we cut to February of 2013. So this is two-ish months now that Sage has been missing. When a new eyewitness comes forward, Bad Bitch Detective Wright-Settles informs us that police received a report from an acquaintance of Sage's by the name of Monica Williams. Monica advises that around 7 p.m. on the night of her disappearance, she saw and spoke with Sage inside the Wild Wings Cafe on Main Street. At that time, Sage told Monica that she was waiting for someone, but didn't give any further details as to who that person might have actually been. Mm-hmm. With this new development, the narrator gives us a review of the most up-to-date timeline. And it is as follows. At 6:27 p.m., Sage receives a text message from Eric McFadden, which states, "I'm leaving. You stood me up." Next, at 6:36 p.m., Kiara Morgan saw and spoke with Sage on Main Street while she was actually on the phone with Eric, telling him that she would see him in 5 minutes. Then, half an hour later, Monica Williams places Sage alone inside the Wild Wings Cafe waiting for someone. For detectives, all of this information tracks because Wild Wings actually shares a building with the Amtrak station, which, if everyone will recall, is where Sage and Eric had agreed to meet that night. They speculate that Sage actually had time to meet Eric in front of the Amtrak station, part his company alive, and walk over to the cafe to meet someone else in time to then encounter Monica around 7 p.m. which would actually corroborate the second version of Eric's story, thus, once again, potentially removing him from the list of suspects. Authorities did attempt to confirm Monica's report, but were unable to do so fully, as the employees at the cafe couldn't positively identify that Sage had been a customer that night. I think they actually said something along the lines of, "We think a transgender person was here that night, but we're not sure that it was this specific person," which is just pretty shitty.
It is.
In my opinion. And per use, there was no video surveillance available.
Of course.
So again, we've had the one business so far.
One out of how many places that you could have walked by, right?
Yeah. More days drift into weeks, weeks into months, and then 10 months into Sage Smith's missing persons investigation, another teenager disappears from downtown Charlottesville. According to the missing persons poster that flashes across our screen, Hannah E. Graham, a student at the University of Virginia, had gone missing on September 13th of that year. She is described as a white female, standing 5 feet 11 inches, weighing approximately 130 pounds, with blue eyes and brown hair. Lieutenant Mooney returns to us now and begins commenting on the search efforts for Hannah Graham. He describes them as, quote, massive, bigger than anything the Commonwealth of Virginia had ever seen. Literally, people showed up at our doorstep within hours of her disappearance being reported to aid in the searches. thousands of people. I mean, we had resources we had never seen before, end quote. And then our friend the narrator goes on to explain that the search for Hannah Graham would become the most intensive and expensive in Virginia state history. Sadly, 36 days after her disappearance, Hannah's body would be recovered. And no disrespect to that situation.
Absolutely
and
not.
Hannah and the people that loved her, but we're not going to spend any time talking about Hannah's case any more than just the investigation.
Yeah.
So here we go. To address the concerns that I will hope some of our listeners are experiencing right now, I'm going to quote Sage's mother, Latasha, because I don't think anyone could express this any better. Mm-hmm. And when I say, quote, portions of this aren't me directly quoting her, because, of course, once again, she uses some pronouns and some terminology that I myself am uncomfortable using with regard to Sage as a person. But I am quoting her as directly as I can, making a few modifications to that terminology.
Sure.
She says, I'm not trying to take away from that situation because, believe me, I felt for her mother. But when I looked at it on TV, it didn't make me feel like I had gotten that much support from the community for mine. A part of me feels like it had something to do with who my child is. She is African American, she is transgender, and she is queer. Full stop. So this is just me talking now. I want to preface again with the fact that Hannah Graham did not deserve to be victimized. She did not deserve to have her life cut short, and her story is just as important as anyone else's. But in my opinion, there has never been a more perfect example of how differently law enforcement agencies and just the general population respond to crimes against one demographic of people versus another.
Absolutely. There could not be a better example.
There
it's
is
literally almost a year to the date, and you get to see such a polar opposite different reaction.
We literally have two teenage girls disappear from essentially the exact same place under almost the exact same circumstances. The first case was limited to the resources of local law enforcement only, a few local media outlets, and the efforts of just the victim's friends and family. Mm-hmm. That's it. The second case, however, had nearly unlimited resources handed down to them from multiple local, state, and government law enforcement agencies. There were countless national media outlets to share this story, and literally thousands of volunteers who were complete strangers to the victim. So why?
I know, and the one sister too said in a different thing that I watched that she was working like downtown in an ice cream shop, and that people like, you know, just sleuths were out there coming into her ice cream shop asking, have you seen this girl? Have you seen? And she's just like, I was angry. And I'm like, I would be too. I don't blame you. I do not blame you.
Just why?
Yeah. Just like an extra slap in the face, right?
I legitimately want everyone within the sound of our voices to ask themselves why.
Mm-hmm.
What were the fundamental differences between these two people? And is this behavior that should continue to persist or be tolerated? Because I say no.
Hello. No.
Yeah, exactly. And I hope
a resonating no.
And I hope all the rest of the folks say no as well. Also, if there's anyone out there either listening or in the lives of any of our listeners who truly believe that we don't have a problem with systemic racism, transphobia, homophobia, or just queer phobia in general, show them this episode of Disappeared. There's no denying what happened here.
Yep.
And as if our hearts weren't already broken enough, next we get a shot of Miss Cookie literally crying into the camera, asking the audience, quote, what makes one life more important than the next life? A life is a life.
It's the worst part of the whole thing.
I was gutted.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now we have a chance to see that it's not just Sage's family and people like you and I, Ashley, who question why these two situations were handled so differently. Lieutenant Mooney, who I said before and I'm going to say again, I truly think is a good guy. And I honestly do believe that he did everything within his power and with the resources he had to try and solve this case, bring justice to Sage and bring justice to her family. He himself, on this platform that he has, poses the question, quote, "Why did 1,000 media trucks show up for Hannah Graham and only a few for Sage's case?" He then goes on to say, quote, "It's a societal problem that we have, and a lot of people need to ask themselves these questions."
That was my favorite. I'm so glad you chose that quote, because I wrote that one down too. I was like, if he doesn't, I'm gonna.
Snaps, I really love that. Lieutenant Mooney.
Absolutely. I actually watched a completely separate, like, couple minute documentary that I found on YouTube. It was not documentary. It was like a news channel. They went back years later and interviewed the family again, and they kind of talked about the differences. And that was the one thing. That was the only clip they took from Disappeared, just to show kind of what that the episode Disappeared talks about. And I love that that's the one clip that they chose to use, was just him saying that. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, good for you. This is a local news channel. Yeah. Good for you.
It was so powerful. And the fact that he, as a cisgendered Caucasian, seemingly good old boy,
probably, like, been in that field for how long?
Exactly.
His whole life.
Exactly. He is identifying that there's a problem.
There's a big problem.
And he, like I said many times, and we'll probably say again, he's using that platform, that potentially international platform, to say, hey, everybody, ask yourself these questions.
Yeah, and he's not afraid to say it.
Yeah, I just appreciated that so much.
Yep.
In November of 2015, that's 3 years after Sage's disappearance, Charlottesville police have an update in the case. They announced that Eric McFadden has officially been cleared as a suspect. According to investigators, Eric's digital footprint, his phone records, and internet activity on the night in question don't line up with a person involved in criminal activity. Additionally, authorities believe at that time, Eric didn't have the means to commit a violent crime due to the fact that he couldn't drive. He was actually taking driving lessons, I think they said. He didn't own a car, and he lived in a heavily populated area. And if everyone will recall, they searched the apartment and there was no evidence that a crime had been committed there either.
That couldn't have been the crime scene.
Couldn't have been the crime scene. And what could he have done to dispose of?
Where could it have happened?
Exactly. Yeah. Where could it have happened? What could he have done to dispose of the evidence that would indicate that a crime had happened, or unfortunately, to dispose of Sage in general? They just don't believe he had the resources to do that at the time. Then in January of 2016, police received information that Sage had possibly been seen in a small beach town 300 miles south of Charlottesville. Following up on this lead, investigators discovered that that person, or the person who had been sighted, wasn't Sage, but coincidentally was in fact her childhood friend and former roommate, Shakira Washington. Detectives used that unexpected opportunity to re-interview Shakira, at which time she tells them that she believes her friend and her other former roommate, Aubrey Carson, knows more about Sage's disappearance than she has told authorities. Taking a further look into Aubrey as a potential suspect, police learn that there were allegations of jealousy between the two girls, as well as some inconsistencies that they note in the things that Aubrey has reported to detectives. The most concerning to them was the fact that Aubrey had previously gone on record as saying she'd only ever met Eric McFadden once in passing, but a witness placed Aubrey, Sage, and Eric all hanging out in a club together just a few nights before Sage went missing. And bad bitch detective Wright-Settles believes that these inconsistencies in Aubrey's story are red flags and indications that she potentially knows more about what happened to Sage than she's let on.
Sure.
However, Aubrey maintains that she has been completely forthcoming with the investigation and she has no idea what happened to Sage. And police have no evidence to the contrary. They have no evidence linking Aubrey to Sage's missing persons case. And then, sadly, our final update of the episode is in March of 2017, when Charlottesville police announced that, once again, Eric McFadden is considered a person of interest, but not a suspect, a person of interest in Sage's disappearance. And he's a person of interest because they believe he may be able to act as a witness in identifying who Sage was with when he parted her company. So what I'm taking from that is if they were to believe that this group of people approach Sage in a very threatening way, the only person that could help them identify who that is Eric McFadden there, because he was there. But that after almost 5 years, Eric McFadden still has not resurfaced.
Nope. He's just missing.
He's just missing. The episode ends with pleas from Sage's family. Pleas for people to set aside their prejudices regarding race and gender identity, and for people to come forward with any information that they might have with regard to what actually happened to Sage, and also for cases involving transgender youth to be treated differently in the future. And that's where it ends.
That's where that ends.
And it's an unsolved case.
And it's an unsolved case. But I do have like some other things that I want to add in, and then like a little bit of semi-updates, I guess.
Okay.
You know?
Let's take a quick break and then come back for some semi-updates.
Semi-updates. We got some good stuff. It's all right.
Good. I trust you.
All right. It's time. So let's just jump in. As far as like aftermath, for several months after Sage disappeared, Cookie would get numerous calls from a blocked number between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. a couple of nights a week. However, when she would answer, there would be no one on the other end. The call stopped when Cookie lost her phone and had to get a new number.
Oh, no.
Isn't that awful? I mean, yeah. I probably would have gotten a... You know what, though? Like, I want to say, like, I probably would have gotten a new phone long before, like, losing it. But it's kind of her only connection, maybe, she feels. I don't know.
Yeah.
Awful. So Dean has shared that he's filled with regret with how he treated Sage after coming out. He wishes he could have acted differently and not lost that time with his child. Since Sage's disappearance, Cookie has also become seriously ill. She was diagnosed with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and has undergone triple bypass surgery.
Oof.
Yeah. Sage's stepsister, Iana, wishes Sage could have been around to see the milestone she's hit since her disappearance, including graduating from high school and getting her driver's license. And then the CUE Center for Missing Persons had a bench made up in Sage's honor. As well, the Remember Tour recently made a stop in Charlottesville, and Sage was amongst the honored. And I kind of wanted to jump over to a quote, actually, from Robert Lowry, and he is the head of that center. It's the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And I actually saw his interview on that same thing that I saw on YouTube. It was from ABC Prime News, and the title was Vanished: Sage Smith's Family Speaks Out on Unsolved Case, which it said it was posted about a year ago. I don't know the exact date, but it was about a year ago that this came out, and they do have him on. And the things that he said, he's just going to hit you with some facts, okay?
Okay.
He says that roughly 800,000 people go missing every year. 60% of these people are African American. Also, we've said this one before.
Yeah.
African Americans make up 13% of the population, but account for 30% of the missing people.
Oh my God.
That is like wild.
It is
wild.
Yeah.
The best part is, and I mean best, you know, obviously very sarcastically, he also adds in that only around 5% of these stories end up on the news.
That's bullshit. It's just...
Whoa, watch your step. You just walked into some bullshit.
Yeah. So
it's frustrating.
It truly is too. And just to hear this man saying these facts just very nonchalantly.
Well, you have to say these things matter-of-factly because they are facts.
That's exactly right. It's true.
They are facts, and people can't argue with facts that you have data to back up. And yeah, say it very matter-of-factly so that, what am I trying to say? Don't sugarcoat it.
Yeah. Yeah, don't make it sound any better or worse than it is, because it's terrible, and just say it how it is. Yes, say it like it is. Okay, so something else that I wanted to kind of add in. I found this article from splinternews.com. Quote, Sage was memorable and stories about her abound. Like how she ended up doing a Vogue-style shoot with a UVA student, which is University of Virginia, on the Route 7 bus.
Yes.
I know. Love this. Like how she once helped carry an old man's groceries to his car while wearing a mini skirt and 3-inch heels. Which I don't even know if I could do that. Like how every club goer leaned in closer when Sage spoke, as if they were campers pulled to a fire, according to Jason Elliott, Mr. Pride of America. But Sage's family and friends say, unlike those afforded missing white girls, the investigation into her disappearance was slow, slapdash, and followed a zigzagging logic that makes little sense to anyone, and they're in search of a better story. So another little fun fact that I learned from this same website is the University of Virginia in Charlottesville was built by the enslaved and worships Thomas Jefferson, a pragmatic and brutal slave owner, as we all know. Charlottesville's public schools closed for 5 months in 1958 rather than comply with the federal order to desegregate.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Nope. This is actual news. This is real. This isn't fake news.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It gets better. In the mid-1960s, a middle-class black neighborhood called Vinegar Hill was raised under the guise of, quote, urban renewal because of its proximity to downtown, which developed into a commercial corridor that would put the city on the map for education, culture, and tourism. What were once black-owned homes are now major roadway, hotel, and staples that border a brick-paved pedestrian shopping mall. These days, Charlottesville can claim the titles of one of the top 10 best American cities for book lovers and the, quote, happiest city in America. But happy for whom?
Literally what was about to come out of my mouth.
Yeah, I like how they posed that question. It says, this past May, and this article was from 2017, a crowd led by noted white nationalist and University of Virginia alum Richard Spencer gathered in Charlottesville Lee Park to protest the removal of a statue of the park's namesake, chanting, "You will not replace us." A CNN news article has told me, though, that he was banned from the campus in 2018 for 4 years for like multiple stunts like this. So, yeah.
He was only banned for 4 years.
Only for 4 years.
He should have received a lifetime
like,
kick in the
forever.
Dick.
Stay away from here. Exactly. You're literally just inciting racism. That's all you are doing. So yeah, that's some fun little interesting information about the area. So the only other thing I have to kind of like surmise what else is out there about this case as of November 20th, 2020. That's a lot of 20s in there. Mm-hmm. It's an NBC29.com article. It's the most recent thing out there about the case, so I just want to kind of to wrap it up that way. The Charlottesville Police Department is again asking for the public's help with information about the disappearance and homicide of 19-year-old Sage Smith. Smith vanished 8 years ago on November 20th, 2012. So this is literally to the date that many. I didn't really do that math. It's 8 years.
Yeah.
Smith was last seen around 6:30 p.m. near the Amtrak station on West Main Street in Charlottesville. It is thought that Smith was going to meet 19-year-old Eric McFadden. In a press release, Charlottesville police say McFadden was the last person to have contact with Smith. Detectives believe he has information that could help solve the case. He was supposed to meet with detectives, did not show up, and reportedly left town. The Charlottesville Police Department classified Smith's case as a homicide in 2016. CPD detectives, state and federal law enforcement, spent months going through evidence and witness interviews. So, like, let me just say, it was 8 years ago, and they say they spent months going through things. That's all I want to say about that.
Yeah.
In June 2019, the Charlottesville Police Department filed a missing persons report for McFadden at the request of his mother. But I read articles, too, that said his mother knew that she was missing in 2014. So something just tells me that like the police went to her and said, hey, we need to find him. And the only way we're going to find him is if you file a missing persons report. Like some police officer somewhere was like, oh, I have an idea. Let's try it this way. Yeah. I don't know. But why did it take that long? So detectives believe that McFadden could be in cities such as Baltimore, Lake City, Columbia, South Carolina, Lake City, South Carolina, Atlanta, Georgia, New York, New York, Rochester, New York, and other places on the West Coast. Which, you just said places on the East Coast, places in the South, and then said, and maybe the West Coast too. So he could be anywhere.
He could literally be anywhere.
He could literally be anywhere. Detectives have checked many leads in these cities, but they have not led to any significant developments. Anyone with information about Smith or McFadden is asked to contact Sergeant Ron Stamets at 434-970-3939 or call Crime Stoppers, which if you're like me, you know the number, 434-977-4000.
And also,
I know you got something over there.
No. And also, there is still the active Searching for Sage Smith Facebook
on
page
Facebook.
Has information of people that you can reach out to if you.
I did. I meant to say that too. I meant to say that too. Only thing as I want to say is that they're saying, you know, currently McFadden would obviously be 28 or 29 years old. That's just something to consider.
So I wonder, speaking of considerations, I wonder if anyone, surely someone has. I wonder if anyone's considered the fact that Eric McFadden and Sage were both victimized that night.
Sure.
Because think about it. They both essentially potentially disappeared at the same time.
Yeah.
And no one has actually laid eyes on Eric McFadden.
Yeah.
And the only people that we know of who have spoken to him spoke to a man identifying himself as Eric McFadden, right?
That's so true.
And he didn't call his girlfriend, who would know and recognize his voice.
Yeah.
And explain to her what had happened on the night in question.
Text messages can tell a story, quote unquote. Yeah. But it might not be him.
He sent her an email or something. So
To an untraceable email, too, which exactly. I thought was interesting. I'm like, yeah. Wow, how do you make an untraceable email?
So obviously, I really, truly wonder whether or not Eric McFadden potentially fell victim to whomever Sage also fell victim to. You know what I mean?
Huh.
I truly wonder.
Could have been that whole group. Could all been part of it. You know, that's something that I was constantly kind of popping back up in my mind, was that comment that Eric had made about trying to walk away from
why would they leave him? Yeah, why would they leave him as a witness if they were going
that's
to murder
point.
Her?
That's
you
a
know
good
what
point.
I mean?
Yeah.
So
and they could have done her and then went and found him later too. It mm-hmm. didn't have to happen at the exact same time.
Now I know that they did say that there was cell phone records and internet activity that place Eric back in his apartment.
Yeah, sure.
But, and I know that I don't remember what evidence they had to indicate that the CVS purchase had actually been made by him.
Yeah.
I think it was just the fact that it couldn't have been the girlfriend who was the other person who lived there because she was out of town. And
but it could
dated.
Have been any number of anybody.
Exactly.
Like, anybody could have taken that card, gone to CVS, then gone to his house, or like been around his house. I mean, yeah. It's a cell phone tower. It's not going to say you exactly that address. Like, yeah. If you knew where he lived, it could be the quote perfect murder if you planned it that way.
Yeah. And he's the perfect suspect because, in theory,
yeah.
He's still alive out there somewhere. They know this because they got an email from him and he called a landline. So they're
this
not
is wild.
They're clearly not looking for anybody else, right? They're looking for Eric McFadden.
Mm-hmm.
So I truly speculate that Eric McFadden and Sage were potentially victimized by the same person or group of people. And those people are smart enough to create this situation in which Eric is the suspect and they will forever be looking for him.
Yeah.
Because he's nowhere to be found.
That's true. Oh, my God. So, yeah, that's the story of Sage Smith.
And of systemic racism, homophobia, yeah. transphobia, queerphobia, and everything that's wrong about Charlottesville.
Absolutely.
Jesus Christ.
I loved those little gems that I found out. Ugh, yeah.
So, Ashley.
Yeah.
I can't change the mood of the room here.
Chuck, 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 chuck,
exactly. All right. So we hope that the folks enjoyed the story. We hope that they would share it.
Yeah,
with
absolutely.
Friends, family, loved ones. We hope that if they have feedback, good feedback for
yes.
us, that they would reach out. And how can they do that?
You can email us at slayqueenspod@gmail.com or slide in the DMs on Twitter, on Instagram, on the Facebook. We also have a TikTok. We also are available anywhere on your streaming platforms. But if you would feel so inclined, we would love a 5-star rate and review on iTunes.
We
that would
absolutely
be a great
would.
Thing.
Yeah.
If you want to just, if you're feeling like you want to do your good deed for the week or the day or the month, depending on how good you are, just give us a nice little, even just a 5-star. You don't have to type anything if you don't want. We love a review, but just give us a little 5 stars.
It really just helps us to grow the queendom.
Stay on top of things. Be out there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I really prefer to be on top of things.
I absolutely do. I'm definitely on top.
Do-do-ch. Gay jokes. Okay. And also, we would hope that the folks would do something very important.
Go out and slay queens.
Go out and slay queens.
Just not each other.
And not your date. For the
night. Not your date.
Not your date.
Don't do it.
If it's a bad date, then
just go home.
Go home.
You can ghost. Like, it's not nice to ghost someone, but just do that instead.
It's better than the alternative.
It's better than the alternative.
Which is slaying that particular person.
No slaying them.
No, don't do that.
Don't do it. Don't.
Bye, folks.